here's one teen girl describing how easy it was for her to get kind of caught up in the moment and go too far physically with a boy.
You are starting to get these urges, and you know, you like, you know, you like think one thing just leads to another, you know, like you're in a room and you're alone and you kiss and then you start making out and then other stuff starts happening, and it just like keeps escalating because inside you're thinking, this feels good right now, it'll be fine. Like, what's the worst that could happen, really?
Well, quite a question there, isn't it? What's the worst that could happen, really? And on today's Focus on the Family with Jim Daly, you'll hear some startling and eye-opening research about the answers to that question. Our guests are going to shine some light on the impact that physical relationships and the hookup culture has on teens and young adults. And Jim, obviously, as we introduce this subject, this is not going to be suitable for younger listeners.
John, that's true, and we want to make sure right up front we give that disclaimer that if you have young kids around, get them to a different place. And for parents, you need to hear this. Oftentimes, we'll get criticized for wading into these difficult issues. But here at Focus on the Family, one of our goals is to equip you as a parent as best as we can with biblical truth, with scientific evidence, to help you be the best parent you can be. And sometimes that means we have to talk about some issues that can be very dicey.
Well, that's true, Jim. And I've got three teen girls, and this is something that we have to, as parents, lean into. We can't run away from the responsibility of talking with our kids and helping them understand really what that question was in that little clip earlier, really understand the worst that could happen.
John, you're the poster parent for this program today with the kids. You have. I mean, you've been through it with your daughters and your sons. Study after study shows that teens will cite their parents as the most influential people in their lives. That's a good thing. Now, the question is, can we equip the parents, all of us, can the culture equip the parents to do the job that parents need to do?
Well, we have some great factual information that you can grab onto as you have those conversations with your teenagers. And Jim, we're joined by Dr. Joe McElhaney and Dr. Frieda Busch, and both are OBGYNs, and combined they have over 80 years of experience in
practice. You've been doing this a while.
You sound old. And
working with thousands and thousands of women, and they've seen firsthand the impact of sexuality, particularly on younger women. And they've written two books, one called Hooked and the other Girls Uncovered, and I'm really glad they're here today.
So am I, and welcome to both of you, Joe and Frieda. Welcome to Focus.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
This is such an important topic, and so many parents, we want to go to the Little League games and take them to swimming and gymnastics and help them with their homework and do all that stuff. But then 10, 11 rolls around, and man, what are we going to do? I, not long ago, had the big talk with my eldest son, and it went kind of like this. I broke it into three pieces. You know, God's design for human beings, male and female, God's design for marriage, and then God's design for sexuality. When I got to that part and kind of began to describe it for my son, his response, first of all, his jaw was hanging open, then he went, yuck, that's gross. And you get all kinds of responses from kids when you get to that point when you got to share the birds and the bees with them, don't you?
Because you're brave enough to do it. I mean, that's the key. I was talking to one of the best-known sexuality educators in the whole United States, and a guy that would not agree with us. He said the conversation with his 10-year-old daughter was going on in the car. She was sitting in the back seat. And he knew it was getting to the point to talk about what intercourse was. And he felt the hair on the back of his neck rising up and his neck getting red. And this guy was one of the best known people in the whole United States in this area.
In this subject.
Yeah.
Oh,
so it's hard.
So it's intimidating even for the professionals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that makes a lot of us parents feel better. In your research, what are the top two or three things that you're finding about teens and sexuality in the country today?
One of the things I'm finding is that teens, our culture has normalized sex, and so they think it's not a big deal. And why do you have to wait until you are in a marital relationship? It's fun, it's normal, it's natural. And so this is what they should do.
So really the one thing is just the broad acceptance of sexual promiscuity before marriage is normal.
And that it doesn't have any consequences, and if you do, then you can take a pill or you can use a condom or whatever, and no problem.
When you look at sexual activity in the teens, I mean, there's data points all over the place. In your research and reviewing the research of others, give us some of the statistical information. How many girls and boys are active sexually at certain ages, say 14 and 16, and by the time they turn 18? Do you have any idea?
Yes. Recently, the CDC published the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which actually showed that by age 18, 75% of young people have already initiated some sexual contact. Hmm. May not have all had sexual intercourse, but they have had some type of touching, oral sex, anal sex, mutual masturbation. And so this counts as sex because it stimulates the brain and stimulates the body arousal.
75%?
By age 18.
Wow. Now, that should be shocking to everybody. That surprises me.
But the good news is that many of them have not had vaginal intercourse. And so you may find that by 47% by 12th grade have had intercourse, but that's 53% who have not.
Which still is breathtaking.
And the numbers even increase with kids in college. For example, one of the statistics that just still confounds me is the fact that about 50% of college kids have had oral sex within the past 30 days. And that, of course, doesn't include the sexual intercourse and the other forms of sexual involvement.
I was going to say, Dr. McElhaney, give us a definition of what constitutes sex. What is the professional definition?
The Medical Institute actually did a definition because there was no universal definition around the country from the Institute of Health or anything like that. And our definition was any behavior that was for the purpose of arousing another person or even arousing oneself.
Sexually arousing.
Yes, sir.
Another person.
Yeah. Which would therefore include, as Frieda just spoke of, oral sex and masturbation and of another person and so forth.
Mm. Let's talk about some of the research that I find very fascinating, and that is brain chemistry. You know, right now with all the technology that we have with MRIs and the tools that you as physicians use, there's been a lot of research on brain chemistry and what's happening with drug abuse and other things, but they've also looked at sex and the brain science behind sex. Help me understand why it goes far beyond just a little promiscuity, that when a girl or boy, especially in their teens, when they're experiencing it, what's actually happening to their brain?
Well, actually, you have two things going on. You have a physical change that occurs in the brain with the actual brain connections being modified as a result of the second event, which is neurochemicals that are released. And so when you have sexual arousal, you have release of chemicals such as your oxytocin, your vasopressin, your dopamine that influences the actual physical structure of the brain, particularly in the prefrontal cortex, the part right behind the forehead. You have that is influenced where you make your decisions.
Mm, and your judgment.
Your judgment, your ability to look into the future and to see consequences as a result of your behavior.
So if a teenager is involved in premarital sex and is, you know, experiencing that arousal, those chemicals washing through their body, mm-hmm. What is the brain science? What's happening to the brain?
Well, first of all, that prefrontal cortex is not fully mature to make those judgments until the mid-20s. So as a teenager, you're asking them to make some decisions about what they're doing now without considering what the future consequences may be. So that is something that you really have to pay attention to.
Is there an appetite that's developed?
Yeah, it's when you look at some of the specific brain chemicals, it really is just amazing. And as a matter of fact, as you introduced this, we really didn't know this was going on 20, 30 years ago. But when a man and a woman are physically in contact with each other, a hormone in the woman called oxytocin secreted that for one thing causes her to trust this other person, but also binds her to this other person emotionally.
Ah.
And so this means if a kid, you know, maybe doesn't even mean to start getting that permanently involved with another guy, starts getting physical with him, oxytocin pours out into her brain, makes her trust him for one thing, and then also makes her bond to him, which explains why some girls who are in abusive situations stay in those situations, because they're so emotionally bonded because of oxytocin pouring out into their
brains. So the chemicals, in effect, the brain chemistry has developed that pattern for that individual.
It's just like a trap. It really is.
And what you have, the cells are not fully mature, and they're being bathed by these chemicals that are causing them to have an emotional and biological response that they are not prepared to handle, and the consequences are there nonetheless.
And there's also an addictive nature to it. The drug you mentioned a minute ago, dopamine, is a reward signal to a person for something they've done exciting, like catch a football and make the touchdown that wins the game. It makes a kid want to do that again and again. Same thing with sex. If a kid gets involved in sex, dopamine pours out into their brain. Matter of fact, dopamine response to sex is dramatic, and it makes them want to continue to do that behavior.
Dr. McElhaney and Dr. Bush, I want to ask this question, because when you look at drug abuse or other things that not just teens are doing today, but adults as well, there's this desire in the culture to medicate, to not feel the pain. Is, in essence, what a child is doing in that context, certainly it feels good because of the chemicals that are stimulated in the act of some sexual arousal. Is that what is really going on here? You're wanting to, in essence, get a high from that experience so you feel good.
You certainly said it very well. That high makes you want to repeat it, as Joe just said, but it also gives you a feeling that of well-being. And many perceive this as a stress reliever as well. So when you have tension, I've had young ladies who say that was their fix, and they were able to go on with whatever else they had to do as soon as they got that release, not recognizing again that they are molding their brain to see that as a normal behavior. They're rewarding themselves for it without considering consequences such as sexually transmitted infections, being emotionally bonded to that person, pregnancy. It's just a myriad of things that can occur. Though it is a normal and natural event to have sex, it has certain implications for the future that can sabotage the future.
And let's talk about that in a minute in terms of sexually transmitted infections and disease. Before we go there, let's talk about, though, the impact of pornography. That's something that is pervasive in the culture. Mm-hmm. It's pervasive in the church. And we need to face it. We need to talk about what's occurring, again, through brain chemistry, what's happening when men and now a lot of women are engaging in that activity where they're, again, stimulating their minds, setting that brain chemistry in motion to get a reward system out of the chemicals in the body. Talk about the impact of pornography. I've heard that it's as addictive as cocaine or other drugs. Is that fair?
I think it's very fair. The dopamine response would be the same with pornography as it is with actual physical sex. The problem is, though, that as we all know, pornography is unrealistic sex. And so particularly when a guy gets addicted to that, and then following that perhaps gets married, his wife can never satisfy the perfection of those women that are in the pornographic material, or even the activity that goes on there. So it's extremely destructive. And also, because it's addictive, it can be lifelong unless a person does some counseling or has a spiritual renewal.
Mm-hmm. And physical changes also occur. Remember, when you think an action or thought and you act on that, it actually hardwires those synapses or connections between the brain cells to make you repeat that action or thought. And so there's a physical hardwiring or tract, if you would, that is established in the brain that makes you do things even when you make a decision to change. And without significant counseling or spiritual renewal, you're destined to continue that behavior.
Well, I appreciate the wisdom and perspective that you're offering there. And you're listening to Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. And our guests today are Dr. Joe McElhaney and Dr. Frieda Bush. And together they've written a couple of books addressing this matter. The first is called Girls Uncovered. And then the other is Hooked, New Science on How Casual Sex is Affecting Our Children. And I wonder if at this point in the conversation, we can kind of take a step back and talk about the messages about sexualization, the normalization of sexual activity that our kids are dealing with, and how we as parents can address that.
Yeah, I think that's really, really important. You know, one way we can do that is to point out the positive side of sex, the positive side of oxytocin and dopamine. The system is absolutely beautiful. God designed clearly. A couple that's never had sex, that gets married, begins having sexual intercourse, bond each other because of oxytocin on the part of the woman, vasopressin on the part of the guy that does much the same thing for men.
It's a bonding agent.
It bonds them together as a married couple.
God's design.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then dopamine causes them to enjoy sexual intercourse and want to continue to repeat that. That results then ultimately most of the time in pregnancy, a baby. But then because the couple's bonded, the baby has a mother and a dad, both, to raise them in this home. And all the studies show that kids that come from two-parent homes have a greater chance of doing well. Mm-hmm. So it's an incredible design when it's not messed up by sex before marriage and by so much of what we see going on in society today.
Let's come back to the comment about sexually transmitted infection. You mentioned that, Dr. Bush, and I just want to come back to that because, again, as parents, that's one of our greatest fears with teenagers, what might happen if we haven't done an adequate job. I would also like you to address this idea that parents put a lot of guilt and shame onto themselves when their kids fail. And perhaps we can hit those two issues. Talk about generally the STI and the STD environment. What does it look like today? And how many children that are involved in premarital sex are infected today?
The CDC just recently put out some new statistics. And what they have said is that in the United States, there are more than 110 million total STIs. Now, that's not 110 million individuals, but that's infection. So one person may have more than one infection at the same time. But when you look at that, breaking it down, about 20 million new STIs occur each year in the United States. And when you consider that 15 to 24-year-olds only make up one-fourth of the population of the United States, they get one-half of those 20 million infections.
So a doubling effect.
So it's a fact that young people are very sexually active. The STIs don't have any boundaries. They infect those who are active. And the earlier you start having sex, age 13 or 12, the more partners you're going to have. And we know the more partners you have, the more risk you have of getting one of those infections.
Let me clarify something. It's important. A lot of teens who are uninformed and 20-somethings and perhaps older adults, they think the only way to get an STI or an STD is through sexual intercourse itself. That's not exactly right, is it?
One of the things I'd point out is you have bacterial infections and you have skin-to-skin transmission with viral infections. And you can get viral infections or either one of them with any sexual contact. So whether it's vaginal intercourse, whether it's mutual masturbation or oral sex, anal sex, it really doesn't matter. The bacteria do not care who you are or what type of behavior is going
on. So it moves through touch.
Infections infect. Mm.
It moves through secretions primarily.
Okay.
Human papillomavirus is pretty infectious if a person has any kind of little break in the skin. And so contact with the secretions that have it, even if there's not sexual intercourse, will pass it. And most people probably don't know that human papillomavirus is the only cause of cervical cancer and the cause of most vaginal cancers and vulvar cancers. And so human papillomavirus is not just a virus that causes little warts.
And it's highly prevalent in both men and women today, isn't it? That's one of the leading STDs.
It is. It's estimated that after the age of 50, 75% of people in this country will have had some kind of human papillomavirus infection because of mixing that occurs with multiple sexual partners.
And two of the bacterial infections that are leading are chlamydia and gonorrhea. And 50% of people who are infected do not even know they're infected because they don't have symptoms. So they can transmit it to someone unintending to, and that person then can transmit it to their next partner. And so it goes on. The only way you can know for sure is to get tested periodically or abstain from sexual activity.
You know, again, parents listening are saying, I don't want to scare my child. Boy, this sounds very depressing. And so often, especially in Christian homes, we don't want to start, I don't think, with simply the fear tactic of, you know, if you mess around, you're likely you're going to get this disease. That needs to be an element. But role play with me. Speak to me as that 15-year-old girl or boy. You be mom and dad. Sit me down and talk with me. How would you do that?
The first thing I would say to them is it is normal and healthy to have sexual feelings. It is a part of who you are. And the only way our world could continue is for us to participate in sexual activity. And it bonds you with that person. But there is a time and a place, because it is so powerful, that you want to treat it with respect and you want to preserve it for that person who cares about you as much as you care about them. And one of the best ways to do that is to wait to have sex until you are in a committed lifelong relationship. So we can talk about how to handle those feelings and how to focus on healthy relationships without sex. And that way you get to know the person, get to know friendship, get to know companionship. What type of things are they interested in for their future? Because you also have plans and hopes for your future, and you do not want to sabotage them or upset those hopes and dreams too quickly.
Well, and to teach your kids fundamentally, and here at Focus, it's important, obviously, to teach them to be attracted to the spiritual nature of that person, you know, the Christian nature that hopefully that person possesses. I think that's one of the great obstacles, appropriate obstacles in relationship for a teenager, for a 20-something. Let's put our faith first and make sure that we hold each other accountable in our physical relationship as we move forward, hopefully toward marriage. Joe, I'm going to put you on the spot, though, because you're the guy. I'm your 16-year-old son. I'm the quarterback of the football team. I get a lot of attention. I get a lot of admiration coming my direction. I'm noticing girls. Not only that, I'm dating them. Talk to me.
Jim, you have a responsibility as a young man to respect and honor the girls that you're around. Some of them will not respect and honor you in the sexual area and will want you to get involved in ways that not only are unhealthy for them, but are unhealthy for you. Sex has a much greater role in our human lives than you might even think when you think of it today as a young man. It has to do with trust. It has to do with family. It has to do with love, commitment, all of these things that really find their place only in marriage. Mm. Now, we're having this discussion right now, but we're going to talk about this, as we already have in the past some, but we're going to talk about this on a regular basis, just like it's a normal part of life, which it is. And it's not just one big talk that we're having right now. You know that.
We need to put an exclamation point around that, because we've talked about that on other shows here at Focus on the Family. It's important to begin talking about this topic with your kids at a young age, 4 and 5, in an appropriate way. And Absolutely. Then keep that dialogue going so there isn't a closure of the heart with the child toward the parent. So as they begin to give more serious advice as a teen, the teenager's heart is open to hearing what mom and dad have to say.
You know, I think when we were raising our 3 daughters, we thought our example to our daughters of loving each other as a husband and wife were sort of adequate. But it's very clear that today, the example of a husband and wife that love each other and are demonstrating that to their kids, that's not adequate sex education. The parents are going to need to talk to their kids, but they don't have to do it in a way that's so serious. They can do it as a part of a normal conversation, ongoing conversation, year after year after year with their kids.
And many studies have shown that parents have more influence over their young people when they actually spend time with them, not just quality time, as we like to say, but quantity counts as well. And being there at critical moments when they get up in the morning, when they are having a meal together with them. How was your day at school? What went on? And being there at bedtime and showing warm, I say authoritative guidance with them, letting them know that you are there to support them no matter what.
Talk to the parent who perhaps did not have that kind of parental advice as a teenager or a 20-something, did fall, perhaps repeatedly, And now they're faced with being the mom and dad, and they have the teenager. And they're having this war in their heart about their own shortcomings as a young person. And now they're trying to tell their son or daughter not to do it, yet they feel hypocritical. What advice would you give that parent in how to deal with that child?
That's one of the conversations that is a very common conversation in my office, where I'll have the mom bring her 13-year-old daughter in for me to put her on birth control or to talk to her about condoms. And I'll ask her, but what is it that you desire for your daughter? And she says, well, I want her to wait until she's at least out of high school, or I want her to wait until she's married. But she knows I didn't, because I had her at 13. And I feel like I'd be a hypocrite if I told her that. And I'm saying, who better? Who has the street credibility? Mm. Who has the ability to influence her more than anybody? And so I will encourage her to say, I messed up, or I made a mistake. I don't want you to go through the consequences that I have. You see how hard it has been for me as a single mom. I want better for you than I have for myself. Mm. And so I will allow them to have time in my office to have that conversation. And many of them will leave the office without having that, because the daughter says, Mom, I want to help you fulfill your dreams, and I also will be able to do that.
So you're saying there needs to be some transparency and honesty, but regret, to make sure the person knows that mistakes were made. I think
Absolutely.
That's good advice. Dr. Frieda Bush, Dr. Joe McElhaney, authors of the book Girls Uncovered and Hooked, New Science on How Casual Sex is Affecting Our Children. I've got some more questions for you. Can you hold on and let's get to those questions, and we'll cover those next time?
Sure.
Absolutely.
All right.
Well, we will look forward to hearing more from you next time, and recognizing that it does take courage as a parent to have this conversation with your children. It certainly has been uncomfortable for me to do that with our kids, but you've got to do it. As a mom or a dad, you play a pivotal role in the life of that child, and you've got to help them make good choices. So to help guide you in that conversation, we'll suggest you pick up a copy of the book Hooked, or the other one by our guest called Girls Uncovered. That's at your local bookseller or online retailer. And then we have a great article for you called Talking to Your Kids About Sex and Puberty. You'll find those at our website. Our program was provided by Focus on the Family. And on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team here, thanks for listening in. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back next time when we'll once more turn our hearts toward home.
That prefrontal cortex is not fully mature to make those judgments until the mid-20s. So as a teenager, you're asking them to make some decisions about what they're doing now without considering what the future consequences may be.
A striking statement there from Dr. Frieda Bush, our guest on the last Focus on the Family broadcast, talking about brain development and how long-term thinking about behavioral choices is just plain difficult for teens and young adults. Now today, on our program with Jim Daly, we'll be continuing the discussion about the brain and how early exposure to sexual images and sexual experiences can adversely affect your children. We'll also talk about what you can do as a parent to protect and guide them in making better choices. And Jim, obviously, as we set this up, this isn't something that's going to be appropriate for younger children to listen to, so you can hear the full conversation, including the first part of the discussion, at focusonthefamily.com/radio.
And if you're the mom and dad of a 8, 9, 10, or teen, you need to hear this. This is not the easy stuff of parenting. We're not going to talk about how to find your child's bent and nurture them in the way they should go. This is talking about their sexuality, what you need to do as a parent to level with them, be honest with them, talk about a biblical perspective with them. But guess what, everybody? The culture is grabbing your kids, reaching out and grabbing them by the throat and dragging them down. And if we as Christian parents don't do the job of talking with them openly and honestly about the environment that they confront when they go to school, when they go off to college, we're going to lose our kids. And it's that serious. And I would really encourage you to stick with us today as we talk about sexuality, teaching our kids healthy, biblical sexuality versus what the world's lies will tell them. And I am very thankful to have these two guests with us, Dr. Joe McElhaney and Dr. Frieda Busch. Between them, 80 years of experience, both as OBGYNs. They've written two books together, one called Girls Uncovered, the other Hooked, New Science on How Casual Sex is Affecting Our Children. And let me welcome both of you back to the studio.
Thank you.
You know, I've got some energy on this. I'm the father of two boys, mm-hmm. two young boys. I'm right in the middle of this right now. And, it is frustrating to look at what the culture is doing. And you look, as we talked last time, at God's design, how he beautifully created us with the right chemical reactions mm-hmm. that when a girl feels bonded to a boy, she opens up, she trusts that person. Mm-hmm. And that's a chemical response. And likewise for the boy and the man. And when it's done in that kind of context, the way God intended it, it's beautiful and hopefully lifelong. Yeah. And the world so corrupts it, and the enemy of our soul corrupts this. And it makes me angry that something so beautiful could be destroyed the way that it's being destroyed in culture today.
You're absolutely right, Jim. And as a matter of fact, so often it's the woman, the girl, that's been hurt. There was a time in my practice, don't know if I've said this publicly at all, there was a time in my practice when I really got angry at men for what I was seeing them do to the women I was seeing in my office. A lady comes in, her husband's just died, a friend of theirs talks her, as this new widow, into having sex. She gets herpes, comes in. I tell her it's a sexually transmitted disease. She starts screaming in the office, "How could he do this to me?" Young women coming in, the guy's trying to talk them into doing deviant sexual practices, and they're doing it because they want to please the guy. Mm. Things like this over and over again. Our young women particularly susceptible. Mm. As a matter of fact, when you talk about the good of our kids, I don't know if you realize that young people who become sexually active are much more likely to be depressed. Girls are twice as likely to have attempted suicide as if they hadn't gotten involved sexually. Guys are 6 or 7 times more likely to attempt suicide if they have gotten sexually involved than guys that are still virgins. So it penetrates the very heart and soul of what a person is mm. when they get involved sexually outside of the design that God has given us, which is sex in marriage.
You've set that up so well. And Dr. Busch, you look at the culture, you watch the culture. You have Glamour magazine as an example sitting on the desk right here. In your research, you have to be up on what's happening. Talk about what you're seeing as you, thankfully, and not us, have to do that research and look at what the culture is suggesting to particularly young women.
And I can tell you, Cosmo magazine and Glamour magazine are two that our older teens and young adults are looking at, and they consider this essentially their research. This particular issue talks about how to have a threesome. And another article in here is talking about the how-tos of having anal sex and not recognizing the negativity that does to a young woman and how it alters what really the intent of sexuality is all about. There are also some other studies that talk about how sex portrayed in the media really affects young people, and it's almost subliminal. For example, 80% of top teen shows contain sexual content.
80%?
80% Whew. Of top teen shows contain sexual content, and an average teen views about 14,000 sexual references each year on TV. And we know that those teens are more likely to initiate sexual activity earlier because they've been desensitized to the value and the beauty of sex. It becomes a physical act, just a thing to hook up, rather than a relationship between two people that has meaning and that has a procreative intent as well as a bonding intent.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that parents may not even be aware of, something like sexting. Some parents won't even know what that term is. What is it?
Sexting is where a kid takes a picture of themselves semi-nude or nude and then sends it by email to someone else.
Through their phone.
Through their phone.
Digital.
They
yeah.
can just sit there in their bedroom, take a picture of themselves with no clothes on, and put in the address of somebody to email it to and send it to them. And I think 20% of kids have either done that themselves or have had semi-nude or nude picture sent to them. Mm. It's extremely common. And what they don't realize is some legal implications, because they can be accused of producing pornography. There have been some cases where kids have been brought to court because of having done that.
I mean, they think it's silly fun because the technology will allow it. But in fact, it could be lifelong damaging.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That just brings up the whole issue about the technology of today and how it's impacted these kids. And that most parents, I think, don't really realize how pervasive this is and how easy it is for kids to get this stuff. Essentially, all kids have had pornographic or at least suggestive material on their computer or on their phones. It's almost impossible for them not to get it. And so it's just important that, for example, parents follow guidelines that you always hear, and that is put the computers out in the public place. They should not have it in their own bedroom where they can do it privately.
And that would include cell phones and smartphones as well, because too many kids keep those in their rooms. I love the suggestion I heard from one parent who said, at 10 o'clock at night, all the technology comes up into the kitchen. That's mm-hmm. where my kids' phones are.
I'd back that up to 8 o'clock. But it is true, and you have mm-hmm. to be engaged. It almost feels, Dr. Bush and Dr. McElhaney, like we're in hand-to-hand combat with mm-hmm. the culture as Christians. Mm-hmm. And what you said a moment ago, Dr. Bush, that 14,000 sexual images are bombarding our teens every year. I think about that. So over the course of 4 or 5 years, you can add up that number. And yet we're going to church, maybe if we're going every weekend, we're going 52 times a year. It just is tough to compete with those messages. So we have to be active in our homes to be teaching our children the right things and try to counterbalance all of this messaging that's going on in the culture. One of the frightening stories I heard, I was talking to a man who has kids in junior high. And he said, you would not believe what's going on with respect to oral sex in junior high. I said, junior high? He said, yeah, the girls and boys at recess will go behind a wall. And this is common in this particular school. And he said, I think it's fairly pervasive in other schools. But that a parent of a junior high boy or girl needs to be aware that things are happening, perhaps, that they need to know about. Mm-hmm. How does a parent go about getting that information? I mean, other than standing out there at recess to see if everybody's keeping their clothes on.
Yeah, exactly. And similar to that is the fact that, and this startled me, that about 90% of teen sex goes on in someone's home, not out there somewhere else, but in homes, either in the person's own home, the girl's own home or the boy's own home, or else in the home of a friend. And so you have the stuff going on, oral sex in the junior high schools, and you're right about that. And then you have sexual intercourse when the kids are doing it, mostly in homes that are not monitored. And what that means is the kids are being left alone at times when they really shouldn't be left alone to do those things that they, for them, comes naturally.
Okay, the voices in my head right now are the fuddy-duddy thing. You know, you're being a fuddy-duddy. If you don't trust your kids that much and you've done a poor job. How does a parent have an appropriate and healthy dose of suspicion? That, you know, assume that your kids are great kids, but guess what? It's possible that they're exploring these areas because of those hormones that are raging in them. It's hard to maintain those boundaries. What advice do you have, Dr. Bush, for that mom that may think, okay, maybe something's happening. How do I begin to address that with my daughter?
Well, yeah, actually, in the book, Girls Uncovered, we do talk about some of those things. We give advice to parents about having a healthy relationship with the child. But one thing, you're going to be the one that's going to help do the cleanup or the if something happens. And so you should be there on the front end as far as preventive. But we talk about the girls having good relationship with their parents, letting them know what you approve of, what you disapprove of, how you can get some of that energy handled in other ways with athletics or with band or other things, and talking to them about just words of affirmation and showing them proper respect. We talk, too, about how parents can recognize their role, that they're not being fuddy-duddy. This is what you are here for.
Yeah, be strong as a parent. This is your role.
This is your role. And so that you're going to be that caring mother or father. And fathers are so important. They really do need to hug their girls, even mm-hmm. as they begin to fill out and their body changes and you're uncomfortable, they're uncomfortable. But if they don't get that touch and that hug from you, they're going to get it from somebody yeah. else. And why not from you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking, my mind just quickly went to the parent of the teen where it seems like it's too late. They're already doing some things that has raised your suspicion about their sexual activity. Is it ever too late to start?
It's never too late.
Never.
One thing we know from our relationship with Jesus Christ is that forgiveness is there. Some kids will get involved. Some kids will get pregnant. Some kids may get diseases and become sterile or get cervical abnormalities that have to be treated. But I think this is, again, why it's so important that parents be right there with their kids in a loving relationship with them to let the kids know that they are loved, that you don't necessarily approve of what they've done, but a lot of times the results have shown the kid that they did the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And the parent there is there to counsel them. In the old days, they used the term secondary virginity. I haven't heard that used recently. But there's some truth to that. A kid can, in a sense, be a virgin again by committing to not getting involved sexually until
kind of reconsecrating yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. There's strength to a kid making that kind of commitment.
And that really is a character decision. It's not a physical decision. It's a character decision where that young person is saying, okay, I've blown it, but now I can gather myself and I can do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And that's an admirable thing, and we in the church need to affirm that and that's lift right. that up.
In the old days, our society used to build a hedge or standards of behavior that were expected for young women and young men. And part of that purpose was to protect the survival, if you would, of the tribe or of the human race by protecting the woman's reproductive ability, by encouraging young men to treat her with respect and responsibility so that they would care for the child. Hmm. Our whole society was set up for that covering, if you would, of the young woman and the building of society. With the normalization of casual sex, and we have left her vulnerable to all of these diseases and things we've talked about for the last few minutes. So we wanted to arm and equip parents to know what it is that you can do so that your daughter, your son, will reach their highest goals and dreams. Girls want to finish high school. They want to have professional careers. They want to be able to marry and stay married. When the surveys were done of young women in high school, these were their hopes and dreams. But the very behavior that our culture is normalizing is sabotaging their ability to reach their hopes and dreams.
And that's well said. That's a higher calling for all of us. In your book, Girls Uncovered, you say that Western society has a kind of schizophrenic attitude toward girls. What did you mean by that?
Well, on one hand, it says to girls, you can be free to do anything you want to do. We're going to break the glass ceiling. You can achieve. And you can be just like boys, in the sexual area even. On the other hand, then, if they do get pregnant out of wedlock, there still is criticism. You didn't use your condoms right. You didn't use your birth control pills right. It's your fault that you got pregnant. You didn't push the guy hard enough to use a condom if you got a disease. And so we blame them if things go wrong, but we tell them they can do anything they want to on the other hand. And the kids are just drawn in all different directions.
So there's no clear guideline.
That's the whole thesis of this book about Girls Uncovered, that in past, like Frieda was saying, society provided protection. Today, the last defense the kids have, because society's abandoned that role, the society's leaving the girls uncovered, the only way we can cover them up with protection and guidance is for parents to fill that role. Mm.
Well, you're listening to some really great insight, wisdom, and biblical perspective from our guests on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. Dr. Frieda Busch and Dr. Joe McElhaney are our guests. And Jim, I'm very curious about the research that the two doctors here have done with regard to what's going on in the college scene in particular. I mean, there's a hookup culture there that really just kind of takes my breath away. And I've got three kids now that I've launched out into the world, and I'm really concerned about the other three who are going to be going into the college years with even greater dangers facing them. What has your research uncovered about the atmosphere on today's college campuses?
Well, it is not uncommon for girls to have had six or more sexual partners by the time they finish college.
Wow.
and many of them have absolutely no relationship. There's a thing now called Down with the Bang, so that you can, there is an internet service where you can put in information about your characteristics, the other person puts in their characteristics, and you can determine whether you want to bang this person or not. Have sex with them. And so you can hook up. And if it matches, then they send you that person's information. And that person then will say that they are down with the bang as well. And so they will even send you for additional information that person's health record. And you all then can connect, if you would, or hook up.
It's an interesting, if I were a sociologist, I'd be looking into this because it's really wild to what you just said. Mm-hmm. In other words, and I think there are many attributes to this. One is the depersonalization of life. We're so into Facebook and all these rather non-relational communication styles where it's just we're texting each other. We're not actually looking eyeball to eyeball. Mm-hmm. And to hear that these young men and women are, there's no real relational hook into this. They're simply, it's utilitarian. Mm-hmm. You know that I have a sexual desire and I'll go on a website and boom, we can meet at 7, 8 o'clock tonight and the act is done and there's no dinner, there's no communication, there's no relationship, it's just physical. That's scary.
But what's thrown off though is the brain doesn't realize that.
Right, it doesn't know the context.
And the neurochemicals in the brain don't realize that. And so even after that person has gone, you're still thinking about them and you're wondering, will they call or why won't they call? Well, you set it up as an internet sex service or you made a hookup contract, if you would. And so that is not consistent.
Right, so all those chemicals that we talked about last time where the girl or the boy is being drawn to that person physically because of the chemical release in the brain, that connection, that desire to give yourself to that person, that's all being destroyed in the process.
That's right. They try to believe that the hookup culture they're in, and it's possible some people don't know what hookups are. The kids consider a hookup not necessarily sexual intercourse, but some kind of physical involvement with each other with no relationship following that at all, no obligation to ever get together again. And so they're acting like they can do that, have the physical enjoyment of the moment, and then have no emotional impact on that, on themselves after that. And like Frieda just said, that just isn't the way humans are made. And it's particularly the women that are impacted by that. They call it the walk of shame sometimes. After having a hookup, then the girl has to walk home. She leaves the guy. She sometimes, even though it's supposed to be with no emotional connection, she still feels like she's been abandoned. Mm. And it's the women that get hurt the most with this.
I can only imagine that context on college campuses. And again, I think for the brain chemistry reasons that we talked about last time, that women are deeply impacted. They may not want to admit it because the culture is saying you're just like boys. And they're mm-hmm. acting out like mm-hmm. boys, trying to be aggressive sexually, yeah. to show disinterest after the physical act is done. But deep in their heart, there's still something occurring there, mm-hmm. which I think would probably, obviously, lead to greater bouts of depression, perhaps even suicide and other things within the hearts of these girls that are trying to compete with their biochemistry. And what's going on?
Yeah, no question. And as a matter of fact, there's people questioned whether it really did affect these young people in college emotionally. Studies from two different universities now have clearly shown that sexual involvement of kids in college does result in depression very often for these young people. And as you said, increased suicide ideation also. Mm.
And one of the dreams that the young ladies had was of getting married and staying married. And this hooking up and breaking up actually establishes a pattern in their brain so that they have normalized the breaking up and the short-term relationships as normal. Hmm. So when they do get married or if they decide to cohabitate and try it out for a while, they have weakened their ability to stay there long-term.
Ah, so there's a diminishing effect once you do this many times.
Of their ability to stay together once they decide that they want to. And so that's why you have a higher divorce rate with those who have had multiple relationships. Those who have cohabitated also have a higher divorce rate. And so the very thing that they would want is a lasting, hold, you know, significant relationship is weakened as a result of that.
In this bonding analogy, in the book you use tape to describe what's occurring there. For us that are the lay people, help us understand what you mean by that, using tape as the analogy.
Well, basically, you, let's just take a simple Band-Aid. The first time you attach it, it sticks very well. And if you pull it off, it kind of smarts or hurts. But then if you reapply that Band-Aid the second time, doesn't stick as well, may even come off before you're ready for it to come off. Well, the same thing happens with those synapses or physical changes in the brain. Once you have that oxytocin vasopressin that bonds you to that person, it sticks very well. But when you break it and hook up with someone else and go to reapply it, it doesn't stick as well. And so eventually what happens is the unbreaking becomes more effective, if you would, than the bonding.
So it actually works in the opposite for your benefit.
It works in the opposite.
And this is a lot more significant and important than we can make it sound. Connectedness between human beings is vital. We're all familiar with the Romanian studies on the infants in the orphanages there, mm-hmm. who were neglected, or where they didn't pick them up, didn't touch them. Those kids would even sometimes die. They didn't thrive very often. Mm-hmm. And that carries all the way through life. Our connectedness with other human beings is absolutely vital. And when something that we do, like having multiple sexual partners, affects our ability to connect to other human beings, it diminishes us as human beings.
Mm-hmm. One more thing I want to say, that Band-Aid that I used a minute ago, that bonding initially is very tight, and when you pull it off the first time, it goes out, it really hurts. In the brain, the same things happen. MRIs and PET scans have shown different areas of the brain. There's an area for love, there's an area for lust, there's an area for breaking or bonding. When you bond, it shows up as a love, as opposed to an area of infatuation. When you break that bond, there's a different area that shows up, pain. And so what happens is the brain doesn't know if it's a breaking of an emotional nature or if it's a physical nature. And so it just shows up pain. The bond has been broken. Mm-hmm. So whether it's a physical bond, such as a broken bone, or whether it's an emotional bond, such as a broken heart, that ouch hurts and shows up in the same area.
It's a powerful analogy, mm-hmm. that's for sure.
You know, Jim, I'd love to do something that we kind of did in the first program, and that was have some role-playing going on. I mean, I've got, as I said, I've got three kids out of the house now. How do I help my 18, 19-year-old child understand everything you've just said in a way that they'll get? I mean, give me some coaching tips. Talk to me like I'm that child about to leave the house.
Well, let me give you an illustration first. In one of the first seminars we did years ago about this, we had a nurse who had sent her son off to A&M with a box of condoms.
Oh, my.
And after the other thing that he was doing was he was calling his mother two or three times a week, asking for advice and telling her these things and that. And she was feeling like he needs to grow up. He should stop calling his mother all the time. He's in college now. And besides that, just go ahead and use his condoms. Well, when we gave her the data about how often condoms fail, she knew she was wrong there. And when we talked to her about how important it was that he does connect with her, even though he's in college, then she started being thankful that her son was calling her. So that being said, one of the best things you can do for your kids who have gone off to college is to keep communicating with them, because the studies still show that kids that are in college value their parents' advice still more than their friends or any other source of advice they get.
Okay, but what do I tell that daughter or son as they're heading off? What kinds of things, based on the information you've researched and what we've talked about here today, what are two or three talking points?
I'll throw in a couple in, Frieda. The first is you can tell them the pressure is going to be a lot worse at college, and they're going to be out from under the cover of their local church that they've always gone to, and the influence there of their kids that they've been going to church with all these years that may be doing the right things. They're going to be at a university where most people's values are different than theirs probably, and there's going to be a lot more pressure. I think that's one of the best things you can do, and that is to warn them that it's going to be different when they're off at college.
Well, and they might even be ridiculed.
Absolutely.
And belittled for what they believe and what they're acting on.
And probably will.
And I think one of the things I would say to the young people is to think long term. Think beyond today. What is it that you really want for yourself? And think whether you're going to be able to look someone straight in the eye and talk about your behavior, especially your mom or your dad. Mm-hmm. But what about yourself, the man in the mirror? Will you be able to look in that mirror and say, I like you. I like what you've done. And I want to see you in the future. Or
yeah, oh, absolutely. I think the power of observation is perhaps one of the greatest gifts we could give our children. And what I mean by that is to help your kids see in their friends what they don't want to be. You know, when a friend makes a mistake, certainly pray for that friend, be a support for that friend, but make a mental note of the mistakes that were made with that friend and say to yourself, I don't want to fall into that trap. I think if you can help train your children to look around and see where those mistakes are being made, I think it's a good thing. I think for me in my fatherhood, that's one thing. I didn't want to be my dad. And so I made those notes that I want to be able to tell my kids every day that I love them. And I think there's power in that, the power of observation, the things you don't want to become that you see in the people around you. I think it's a good thing to do.
I can tell you one thing my mom told me that I never forgot, and that is never date anyone that you would not want to see the father of your children as the father of your children.
Yeah.
And if he is not somebody that you would want now, then why are you giving yourself to him or allowing him inside of your body, that you should protect not just your body, but you should protect your heart as well. Mm-hmm. And if you do, you may end up being related to that person for the rest of your life, not just through the body, but through the baby or through relationship otherwise. My mom didn't know anything about neurochemicals, but she did by experience have the same advice that would show that there is a neurochemical connection, but there's also a physical connection. Believe it or not, if you have sex, it is expected that pregnancy will occur. And it does, even if you use a condom, even if you use a birth control. And there are many women who may select, if you would, abortion. But that's not a walk in the park either, because it affects you not just physically, but also emotionally and spiritually, and is something you never forget.
One point we need to make is that certainly we're all made up of chemicals. I mean, we're chemical reactions, we're hormones, we're all these things. Yet in our spirit and in who we are as a being created in God's image, there's something known as character. And that your character needs to rise and be nurtured so that you can manage these appetites in this life. So our character and our relationship with Christ can certainly overcome these appetites.
Absolutely. The human being is so much more complicated than the way that God's created us and will ever understand. And we clearly can overcome these things that happen in our brains with our physical behavior, like the hormones and so forth, with our character, with the Holy Spirit working in us.
Is that really is the distinction between us and animals.
Absolutely. So please don't get us wrong that we're saying it's all chemical. It's not. It has to do with who we are as human beings and made by God.
That is well said. And we're wrapping up this second day. And again, if you didn't hear last time or missed part of this one, go to the website. And John, you can give the details there. Mm-hmm. I think it's appropriate. And may I ask you, Joe, to pray right now for parents. Pray for those like me and like John and like millions of others who are trying to do this right, who are trying to compete with the culture, trying to get the right values into our children so that they make the right choices and make the right decisions that will set them up to be prosperous in this life because they're following the Word of God.
I'd love to do that. Precious Father, even calling you Father reminds us of the fact that you've given us, who are fathers, that role, and those who are mothers, the role of being mothers. And it's a blessing that you've given us that role, because you've given us these precious kids to guide, to love, to encourage. And we pray, Father, that we might commit ourselves in every way to those children, that we might understand the best way to raise them up. We want them to be your children. So first of all, we want to guide them in that direction, towards you, so that they might come into a loving relationship, a saving relationship with you. But then, Father, that they might see that when you give guidance to them in all areas of life, it's for their good, not just to keep them from having fun. So in our homes, I pray that we might, as parents, have a fun home, a place where even serious things can be discussed and where guidance can be given in a way that is pleasing, like honey, in the hearts of these kids. We pray for the kids. We pray for their futures. We pray that they might not get involved in things that will be counter to what you want them to do. So, Father, encourage parents. Make them strong. Make them realize it really is a fight for their kids and for them as parents to be countercultural. So bless them. Bless every parent, Father, and bless their children. And we pray that they might be triumphant in the end in you. In Christ's name we pray that. Amen.
Amen. Dr. Joe McElhaney, Dr. Frieda Bush, authors of the books Girls Uncovered and Hooked, New Science on How Casual Sex is Affecting Our Children. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, John.
That heartfelt prayer wraps up this powerful two-day conversation with our guests. As a dad, I've got to say, the two of you have kind of opened my eyes here to the physiological aspects of my kids and how that brain development has affected their decision-making. And I'm grateful that we've been able to share this conversation with our listeners. Let me challenge you, as a mom or a dad, to pick up a copy of the books by our guests. In particular, we're pointing to the book Hooked to learn more about this matter of brain development within our kids. Find that at a local bookseller or online retailer. Of course, we have a lot of trusted advice by way of resources, articles, videos, audio, links, and so much more. All of that available when you stop by our website. Our program was provided by Focus on the Family. And on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team here, thanks for listening in. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back next time when we'll once more turn our hearts toward home.